Welcome to Kimapa. Jared and Robbie are here with you after, I think it's fair to say, one of the most depressing India-Pakistan games of all time. You've played it, a lot of these games, and I've commentated a few of them, but I've written on heaps and been to the ground. It's incredible how hyped these games are and how absolutely shithouse they could be when you actually see them. This was a bad game. This was a bad game of cricket. I'm sorry. I felt wrong having to watch it.
Yeah, it was... the India-Pakistan games are always going to have hype about it, right? But, ability-wise, Pakistan fans can have all the expectations they want from their team, but they are genuinely living in denial if they think that they can be competitive with the current Indian team. The current Indian team is head, shoulders, and body above Pakistan. Pakistan, I think, are in denial of the fact that they're in a rebuilding phase of their cricket team. They, for crying out loud, they've changed 6 coaches since 2023, right? And if you're going to do something like that, imagine the amount of insecurity that exists within the group. They have 5 openers that in the top 7.
I think on commentary last night, you mentioned the 5 openers more than we actually saw.
I did.
More than we saw them. when they collapsed in our chat group, it was quite funny. Someone was saying, lucky they brought all these openers in then, because they're going to need, if they're going to lose 2 wickets in the first 2 overs, maybe you need extra openers. But yeah, it's funny actually, because if you look at this team structurally, forget the 5 openers, because that is a bit weird. But outside of that, it's actually structured really similar to how India is structured, right? As in, mystery spinners and frontline weapon bowlers, all rounders, left arm wrist spinner, and all these sorts of things. But I said this on my podcast last night. Every single player that Pakistan has that has a similar kind of player in the Indian side, they're just worse, right? They're so far behind the talent level of India. It's ridiculous.
Worst is probably harsh, but just unfinished. They're completely worse. Unfinished products yet. Yeah.
Right now, okay.
Of course, if you're gonna be factual about it, yes, they are nowhere close to where the Indian players are.
Unless one of us could do a knee operation on Shaheen Afridi, there is not a single player in this Pakistan side at the moment where you'd be like, they should be pushing for selection in the Indian squad. Peak Shaheen Afridi, no issues at all. Yeah. But other than that, you look at this side and you're like, okay, maybe Siam Ayoub in a couple of years will be an interesting one, especially because of his bowling at the moment. But other than that,
if they persist with him for that long.
Well, I mean,
one of my things is that when I watched the Pakistan team bat yesterday, it just felt like a team who had no control or they had no idea about how they were going to go about getting their runs.
Yeah.
It felt like, oh, we're going to get this result, so we're just going to try and get that result. There was no method to the madness. There was no process-oriented approach to, okay, there's going to be an ebb and flow with my innings. I look to get a boundary or two in an over and then rotate the strike as often as possible. In the first 8 overs, Jair, there were 31 dot balls. Tells you a story that the coaching staff have done nothing with them that is process-oriented. God alone knows what that coaching staff is doing.
Well, they've told them to go for an intent. Right, it's quite clear that they're doing that. But I think it was you or Sanjay on commentary was talking about there's no middle ground, right? It's they go for a boundary or there's a dot ball, and they're not. I think it might have been you. I hate saying nice things about you, but I think you might have said on commentary that if you look at them, they're not trying to hit boundaries. They're trying to hit the ball really hard, which is a very different thing. And you and I know that there was a shot that Sky played. And I know by that stage the game was over and all that sort of stuff. There was a shot that Sky played later in the game, where he just lofted a ball over cover. He only got 2 for it. But I was like, that's a man who's like, they've got mid off 2 straight, right? All I need to do is just ease this over the top. Maybe if I time it well enough, I get 4, right? And you watch Pakistan play, and they're like, you could see the veins in their hands popping out because they're gripping the bat so hard. And so it's all or nothing every single ball.
Yeah, and I'm saying, let's just take a youngster, right? Abhishek Sharma has just started playing international cricket over the last, say, 18 months, right? A lot like a lot of the Pakistani blokes as well. And just the way he approached his batting. Yes, he was being aggressive, but he was being aggressive and showing intention with mindfulness, right? Even though he was trying to hit in the air, he was trying to hit in the air in the offside, right? He timed the ball for 6s over covers, over long off, right? the intent with the way he batted, yes, it's power. Yes, it's you want to score boundaries. You want to score at a quick nip. But there's a method to it. There's a way, there's a percentage of getting that to work in your favor. And you stay within that range. So there's a lot of knowledge of your own batting and what works for you. And I don't think the Pakistan players have any clue about what their method to their madness is or how they'll score their runs.
No, I agree. And there was... So the two early boundaries they got off Jasprit Bumrah, which were fantastic strikes. Both of them were beautiful strikes. But again, they look a little bit, I don't want to say sloggy, but they look a little bit forced, like they're trying to hit the ball very hard rather than, okay, he's bowled here. Let's just pick up a boundary. It's more going for it. It's fascinating. I mean, I talked to some of the Pakistan camp beforehand, and they did feel like this was a little bit too early for them. And that's what it looked like, right? It looked like a bunch of younger players who were not quite ready to be out there at the moment.
Yeah. And for me, as when you listen to the conversations that revolve around, say, the broadcast room or amongst the journalists, when you just hang around there, you hear a massive sense of disappointment from the Pakistan contingent, simply because they're like, oh, they're very disappointed with this side. But you have to be also realistic about what the team is. It is a young side, okay? It is sans any experience in the top seven, right? Outside of Fakhar Zaman, there is really nobody else that has any experience in that T20 side, right? Everyone are new, and they need to build themselves up. They need to deal with how they will go about scoring runs at the international level. And it feels like there's no room for that, you know? And for me, I think that is an aspect that when you're building a side, and I've seen that across the other Asian nations. I've seen that with Pakistan for sure, Bangladesh. You see that with Sri Lanka. And you see that they're constantly rotating players. Right. And for example, Sri Lanka have been doing that since 2019. I remember talking about this in 2019 World Cup. Like, you need to be patient when you're rebuilding a side. You need to give a good bunch of talented blokes a good year or two. Invest in that whilst developing other players in the background who are playing A cricket. Right. And then so if anything happens, if you think, OK, you've given someone a long enough run and then they don't work out, then you actually have a player ready for it. To take that spot. You know, teams that actually do that exceptionally well, Australia, England, I think New Zealand also do that. They back people for a consistent and a long period of time, which produces results over a period of time. Because if a player's got any self-awareness and any ambition, then just playing at that highest level for a period of time, they will figure out a way to score runs there and be successful.
Yeah, and it's also, it's about role definition, right? Like, if you are... And we've talked about this so many times. I think did we talk about it with Sanju Sampson recently as well? Like, when it comes down to it, it's like, if you've got five guys who are openers and you've got Fakhar Zaman at, what, four in that side? Like,
four.
Neither of us really see him as a four. Like, maybe at three is fine, but they can't even fit him at three. Max. And I remember being at St. Lucia where we got our structure of our team so wrong. And, I'm going to point out here, I wasn't involved in the original draft, but they got the structure of the team so wrong that by the halfway through the season, David Warner was batting at number... Yeah, completely. Nothing to do with me, that one. We had David Warner batting at number four, right? And it's just like, well, if you've paid all this money for David Warner and you're batting him at number four, what are we even doing here? And you look at this, and again, I can understand why this happens. And it's a lot of it is just to do with the fact that if you're a good Pakistani younger player, you're probably going to gravitate to the top of the order. But now they're in this other situation where they've got a bunch of players playing out of position against Jasprit Bumrah and Varun Chakravarti and Kuldeep Yadav. So they're not just going up against bowlers that are a higher level than they're used to. They're also doing it in a position that they're not experts in. Like, you are being set up to fail, right? And again, as we just said, all these different coaches, they've got this new setup. This is all new to them. This isn't their tournament, right? Their tournament is trying to get ready for the World Cup. This is too early for them in their changes and everything else. But it looked too early. Like, it looked really early, didn't it?
Well, I don't even think they might be ready for the World Cup. I'd be very impressed with the coaching staff if they're actually able to get this team to shift their mindset around to become a World Cup contending side in a year's time. Because I do they even have a year's time before the World Cup happens?
They've got no time.
No, they don't. And that poses a specific challenge to the coaching staff. Like, how are you going to coach these guys with, as far as their process is concerned, to score runs at the international level against world-class bowlers, right? Where people are hunting for wickets, where people are like vying. And how are you going to build a team as far as that is concerned, and even structure a batting order where you have five openers, and then you like... They have, like, let's break this down a little bit, right? Mm. I might go off on a little bit of a monologue, but just...
I love it.
Pull, yeah, so string me up when you can. So, five openers who are in the top seven of this team. All of these five openers have scored runs in their respective club teams, or state teams, or whatever Pakistan Cricket have. And they've gotten selected into this Pakistan side based on their performances as openers, right? Opening the batting is what is most familiar to them, is what is most natural to them, and that's what they've got helped them get selected. Now, when you've picked them up into the international side and you've picked five of them for the top seven positions, then you need to exercise a level of patience that has not been executed before, especially for Pakistan Cricket standards. You need to be able to say, okay, you know what? This is your role for you. I'm defining this role to you. I want you to get in this place. And every preparation needs to start from there. You have to stop preparing as an opening batter. And you will not open the batting for the next 18 months. You will only do this, study this, exist from here. Like for Fakhar Zaman, if he's batting at number four, I'll be like, I will never bowl a fast bowler to you till you're playing in the death. I'll just bring spinners on at all points in time and get you to get used to getting off the mark and getting into the zone whilst facing spin bowling, right? And like, these are stuff that coaching staff should be actually applying for with these guys as far as preparation is concerned.
Yeah, start, they shouldn't be playing fast bowling at all. Not in the fast bowling net, right?
Yeah, because see, just start and bat only spin. Last 10 minutes, fast bowlers and pure death bowling, nothing else, right? Now, for example, you get in the 7th over and you battle the 16th over, you get 4 overs of fast bowlers or maybe 5 overs of fast bowlers between 7 and 20. Now, those 5 overs, out of 30 balls, you get to play 15 deliveries. Let's say 15 deliveries at best, if you play 50% of the deliveries. 15 deliveries, you need to score 30 runs. Now, that's a 200 strike rate and you're already set by then. So, how do you set yourself up to go into bat at the 7th over when you have 13 overs to go, which is about 80 odd deliveries, out of 40 deliveries, how do you maximize that? Out of which 40 deliveries, 25 is of spin and 15 is of fast bowling. Mm. Now, out of those 40, how can you get a 70 or an 80, right? That's best case scenario. So you practice for best case scenario day in and day out at the position you're batting at. Even if it's not natural to you, if you get into the national side, then that's what you practice day in and day out based on the position you are batting at. I don't understand how coaches at the international level are not using these exercises and structures for youngsters, for that matter. When you saw the Pakistan team batting yesterday, you felt like there is no one talking to them about batting. Nobody. And you see that with a lot of the other Asian countries also. I saw that with Bangladesh. Bangladesh, the way they started against Sri Lanka, oh my God. It's like they want to score 200 runs in the first 6 overs. It's like, for crying out loud, you need to just see off the new ball a little bit. You're playing on a wicket that's slightly fresh. There's a little bit of a grass tinge, like green tinge on the top. Like, just get in a little bit. Time the ball a little bit. Yes, you want to hit in the air? Of course, hit the ball in the air. Let the intent be there. But hold shape with intent. Right? Just this conversation. How difficult is this to have a conversation with an international cricketer who's playing at the highest level? Just say, hey, go about this way. See how this works for you. We're going to give you a rope. Give you 10 innings. Go about it this way. See how this works for you. If it doesn't work for you, okay, let's have a conversation. Let's come to an understanding of what works best for you based on who you are and how you play your game and based on your technique. These are conversations just by looking at them playing on the field, I don't think people are having with these batters.
It's really
interesting. That's my rant.
No, I get that. I think that it would be interesting to see. Did you ever work with Mike Hessen? I don't think you did.
No, I haven't. I've worked with Mike.
A bit different. It'd be interesting to know what they've done, because there is an element of, it feels like you have players playing out of position and too soon in major tournaments, right? And maybe that isn't as much, the coaching obviously has picked this side. There is an element of that. But you also know what I mean is, it's very hard to fix these things kind of on the fly a little bit. But there are some things that I think they can do. So for instance, I just forgot, Robbie, I don't think you've mentioned it yet. How many openers did Pakistan have in this side? All right. So Yesterday, I'm watching Siam Ayoub, and I watched him in a little bit beforehand as well. And my theory is he can't face the brand new ball, right? Now, where does he bat in this side? Do you remember?
In the CPL?
Yeah.
In the CPL? But
I'm saying in this side, he's opening. He's one of their five openers, but he's the actual one of the ones opening, right? Okay, and I think he has a real problem with the new ball. So I look up the stats, right? In the first over of his whole T20 career, he averages 20. That's incredibly low, right? That's a very low average. In T20 International specifically, he averages 8.8, I think, in the first over, right? That follows up in the second over where he also struggles quite a bit. So someone needs to look
where
at this.
Where do you get these stats from, man?
But they're just, it's in the back of my brain. There's a little...
Rakshit, send me on the chat, please.
Rakshit doesn't know where they are. Varun does, but Varun's, I don't know where Varun is today. But yeah, so you look at that and you go, have they looked at that? Like, is that something that have come along? Because if that's the case, to me, that always makes him an ideal number three. Or, Robbie, if he's terrible against the brand new ball, do you know what you don't get him to do? Face the brand new ball. You get him at least at the other end when he's opening. Do you know what I mean? You give him, you give him a second to like get himself in a little bit. So I just feel like the whole structure, and this is not having a go at Mike Hessen or Salman Agha or anyone who's involved in leadership, but the whole structure just looks rushed and unorganized at the moment. Like this tournament came too early, and maybe this is just experimental for them, and they're like, we're not going to win this tournament. We want to be better at the World Cup, but we're not going to win this tournament anyway. Maybe we can find out some things. So perhaps I was just going to say, perhaps throughout the whole tournament, because we don't want to judge them too harsh. They went up against the world champions who played really, really well and smashed them around a little bit. But perhaps throughout the whole tournament, what they're trying to do is actually get that experience into everyone, make everyone feel a little bit more comfortable so that when they hit the World Cup, yeah, they won't still be ready, but they'll understand their game a little bit better. Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Yeah, then that's what they should be working towards. But I think the expectations are very different. I think they expect like them to win a World Cup or a championship. But this is just a side that's rebuilding itself. And I think like for all intents and purposes, it feels like everyone's in denial as far as that is concerned. Like there was comparatively, there was nothing even close between the Indian team and Pakistan. Like even now when I just look at the Asia Cup and I look at who could be the teams that could pose India a challenge. And for me, I can't pick one side with all due respect to each one of those sides. I think there'll be phases in which challenges will be posed. And I think, for example, Sri Lanka have the bowling to pose India a challenge, but they will have to have a good day, right? Everything will have to work for them. Similarly with Afghanistan, I feel like they have the bowling to pose India a challenge, but they will have to have a good day, right?
So if you go back to Sri Lanka, they're interesting because I think they have, and we'll move on to some of the other sides in a bit when we finish with these two. But I do think with Sri Lanka, the big difference is they have batters of the quality who can handle facing Bumrah and everyone else. Doesn't mean they're going to make runs. That's a different thing, right? It's still under pressure and you're playing in a T20 game and everything else. But there were times in this game where, I don't know how you felt, but I kind of felt that Fakhar Zaman was the only player who looked like he should be able to make runs against this team bowling the way that it was, right? Like I thought, if he makes runs, they'll get a total. And if he doesn't, I don't know if they will.
He should be opening the batting.
Maybe he could bat five.
Maybe he will in the next game. You never know with this team. it's so haphazard. You never know with them how they end up kind of changing tactics in that sense. But you hope that someone of Mike Hessen's tactical prowesses. I think he's very sound tactically. Mike Hessen is a coach. I don't know his relational acumen with the players, but tactically, he's very, very sound. So I think you will see consistency from this side. I think as far as tactics are concerned, but one can only hope that, you know, for Pakistan's sake, that there are guys who give this team a length of time to breathe and become players of the potential they possess.
Yeah, but just on the side, so obviously, how many, just to check, how many openers did Pakistan have in this? So at number six, right, they have Hassan Nawaz batting at number six, right? Mm. So Hassan Nawaz is 23, project player.
Hassan Nawaz or... Is it Hassan Nawaz, the left-arm spinner, him?
No. Nawaz.
Okay, that's a youngster.
You're thinking of Muhammad Nawaz.
Nawaz, correct. Yeah. Hassan Nawaz, that's right.
Hassan Nawaz, listed at 23 years old, so still a prospect, played a little bit of cricket, had a really good record in the PSL last year. I think he averages over 40 in the PSL, right? In fact, he does because it's right in front of me and I should have remembered that. First class, he's played 11 games and he averages less than 30 so far. Right? Fine, he's a prospect. We're not saying he's going to be neat to be fully developed. But the difference between, if you look at their recent times, they've been making runs against lesser teams, right? You know, West Indies, Bangladesh, Afghanistan. I think they might have played the UAE as well. Some good bowling attacks and bowlers in that, but it's not Bumrah, Kuldeep, Varun, everyone else, right? And so you look at that and you're like, well, how is a guy who averages less than 30 in first-class cricket going to be able to handle this? It's a different form of T20 cricket than you would get in the PSL, even in the IPL. This is the Avengers assembling, right? This bowling attack, you know, other than Hardik Pandya, who's obviously there for his all-round skills, everyone else is ridiculous. And so you do look at that, and he's coming in at number six. That doesn't give me a lot of confidence, right, in that level of player. And so we're not saying he's never going to be any good. Because he's 23.
He's an opener himself, by the way.
Stop it. He could bat number three. But the point being is that there is an element to the actual... Who's India's number six? Hardik Pandya, Sanju Samson, Shivam Dubey? Not only are they high-quality players, they're really experienced high-quality players. And you're talking about a 23-year-old who hasn't yet played 12 first-class games, who's made one first-class 100, right? A lot of success in franchise cricket, but in a brief amount of time, it's such a step up, and that's what it looked like to me in this game. Outside of a couple of players, it just looked like such a big step up for Pakistan. And so I think we can have a go at the selection a little bit. And you talked about coaching and putting players in the right position. I'm with you with all that, but when it comes down to it, you're just probably not going to see a Hassan Nawaz level player playing for India because he just wouldn't get in the side, right? There's no way for him to force him. He would have to be older, to be more experienced, to force his way into the side, to get past other players, right? In Pakistan, they don't have that.
But one thing you also have to understand, Jar, is that a lot of the youth over the last 10 years have always set themselves up to play white ball cricket and not red ball cricket. So they don't really care about their performances in red ball cricket. And the game isn't set up for the red ball game, right? Which I think is a folly, to be very honest. I think it's a mistake. They shouldn't be doing that. They should be setting up their game for the red ball because it is out of the prowess of the red ball game that they will thrive in white ball cricket. Because white ball cricket becomes really simple after that. And a lot of cricketers growing up don't understand this. And if they have any wits about themselves, what they will actually do is set their game up for the red ball, to play the swinging ball, to play the seaming ball and still score runs with that, play confidently. Like approach it with the T20 or the white ball approach, the aggressive approach, but with the precision of being able to execute it with the red ball, you know? And then suddenly, when you're playing the white ball, it's literally piece of cake, right? Now, today, when you look at the likes of a Surya Kumar Yadav, Shubman Gill, let's take, say, Hardik Pandya, Shivam Dubey, all of these guys are guys who are able to play the same quality of shots with against a red ball, right? And a red ball is much harder to do that too. And they're able to do that against the red ball. And so when they go up against the white ball, it feels like a piece of cake, man.
And so, and you're right. And so what I'm saying is that when you get to major tournament play, right? So even in the IPL, this doesn't matter as much. I mean, that's the best T20 franchise league, obviously, in the world. But even in that, it doesn't matter as much. But when you get to major tournament play and you're going up against Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, right? You're going up against Jofra and Wood. You're going up against, Rabada and Unrichter, Kia, and whoever else, all their great bowlers, right? Suddenly, you're not really playing franchise white ball cricket anymore. You're actually playing a bastardized version of Test cricket at that point. If you don't, Shivam Dubey, neither of us think of Shivam Dubey as this great red ball player, but in 25 matches, he gets four first-class hundreds and averages over 40, right? Sky averages, what, 38, 39, and could have played Test cricket in a different sort of era, right?
Yeah.
The difference between that and a 23-year-old who might go on to be that level of player, right? It's just such a jump up. And I think that that's what it looked like to me, you know, completely different worlds. There was some interesting stuff too, tactically, like Abhishek Sharma bowling to them as they knock him around for singles will be one of my, most interesting ones. But I've got something for you. We did a big piece last night on Bubba and Rizwan and why they don't play, right? But when Bubba and Rizwan are in the side, Pakistan is being bowled out about 12% of the time, right? When they're not in the side, it almost doubles to 21% of the time. So you have this is what I'm really interested in, get your thoughts on this. I think Mike Hessen has done the right thing in going, we can't win a tournament with those two players, right? But at the same time, what you are doing is, to go back to my previous point, you are taking out your two most talented batters who are going to be the best at facing the high-end bowlers, right? Because they don't give you the strike rate. But you're actually opening up the side to being bowled out. There's no way you can win this conversation. You either have them in the side and you end up with an underpass score that usually gets chased anyway against the best teams, or you don't have them in the side and you're twice as likely to be bowled out.
What are their strike rates individually?
I've got so many stats on them, but do you want their best strike rate? So both of them, I think Bubba averages well over 40 against finger spin. And Mohammad Rizwan averages 60 against finger spin. Would you say they're both very good players of finger spin?
Yeah, I think so. They're decent.
Their combined strike rate against finger spin is 112. I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things: the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Yeah, bro. Like, if that doesn't tell you a story, then what will? Like, that's genuinely the thing. It tells you a story of how they are set up and how they approach their cricket and what is their mindset when it comes to this, right? It's like different people have different intentions of playing the sport they love, right? Yep. Now, but you read the stats. Long enough, far enough, you'll see patterns there that define to you what kind of a person and what kind of an athlete this is, right? And you've seen this across the board, across different countries, different teams. And that's the complexity of our sport. It is an individual sport that exists within a team sport because of the inbuilt competition that is there that exists within each team, right? And couple that with the desire to be the best player in the side and the guys with the best numbers in the side, if that is your one of your motivating factors, then it'll show up after a period of time. It shows up. The stats will not lie to you. And I'm sure you know better than anyone out there that the stats reveal everything to you.
Well, we just had Baba Azam's strike rate against spin on the screen. And now we've got Mohammad Rizwan. This is what I find interesting about these two things we've just seen. We know that in the last 10 years, we've seen a huge rise in the way that people attack spin. Probably in the last, 3 to 4 years, that sort of on the back of maybe Maxwell, Dubey, Heinrich Klassen, you know, even people like late career people as well, like David Miller out of nowhere, always struggling with spin and suddenly whacking spin. Mohammad Rizwan is getting slower against spin, not faster against spin. And Bubba is about the same as he was 3 or 4 years back, or actually 6 or 7 years back, probably as well. And so I get why after what happened last night, if you're a Pakistan fan, you're like, we have to get these two guys back in. What are we doing? We can't face Jasprit Bumrah with, you know, Hasan Nawaz and these sorts of guys. But at the same time, The reason they're not here is on the screen right now. It's because even when they're great against spin, they're not great against spin. They're not giving you any impact. So Jimenez, who was the Indian analyst, I don't know if you've ever had anything to do with him, but you should chat to him one time. He's a great, great guy. He's been on a podcast quite a few times. He's got a metric called impact. So I think this year, if I'm not mistaken, Mohammad Rizwan in T20 cricket is averaging over 50. Mind-blowing average, right? We have him as a slight negative on impact. So the guys at the other end
and are you surprised?
Have to be scoring at like twice his speed to be able to make
and that's
him
the thing,
yeah.
To make him look good, right? And that's the whole thing. Like, it tells you a story that words don't have to define. We don't have to call it what it is. The stats itself kind of define what it is, you know, and what people are trying to do and how they're trying to play. And that's all well and good if you're winning and if things are fine, you know. But if you're not, then you're going to expose yourself. It's gonna be out there for the world to see and for them to understand how you operate. So, like, there's nothing wrong with being self-centered, but it shouldn't be the expense of the success of the team. And you find a lot of you see a lot of self-centered players. You see a lot of self-centered players, and that's absolutely fine because our game is an individual sport within a team sport. So, and that's absolutely fine as long as it doesn't impact the result of your team doing well, right?
Did you play with
you
Kallis?
See a lot of, yeah, no, yeah, with him, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a perfect example of if you hire him and you pick him in T20 cricket or one day cricket, you have to be, everyone in the team knows he's just going to be Kallis. He's not going to play any differently, right? And so you have to stack the team around him, right? And there's no...
Build a team
And we saw Pakistan try and do that. I think, remember, Pakistan probably should have won the World Cup in the UAE if it wasn't for the fact that Marcus Stoinis mishit a ball over the top of a fielder who was standing in the wrong spot, right? They went really close to beating that really good England side before Shaheen Afridi injured his knee late in that game, right? So they went within a couple... But that was when you had a team that was taking a ton of wickets, right? Mm. You can have two anchors scoring par totals if you've got to run through a great bowling lineup. The minute your team isn't stacked around that, the batters are the ones who have to change. And you look at Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, Joe Root of recent times. Those are three great all-format players who have changed their games because their teams or the situations needed them to change. Right?
Yeah.
That wasn't how cricket used to be played. In the old days, it was like the star plays like this and they play like this forever and nothing ever changes. Now, stars are much more likely to change. And I think that's another reason that Bubba and Rizwan stick out. It's because everyone has said you need to change the way you play and they are either unable or just unwilling to do so.
Yeah. And I wouldn't know about it, so I'm not going to speak much about that. But I think the motivation to even make those changes comes from what you want to achieve as an individual and as a team, right? If there is a desire to win world championships and individually as a group, then you are more open and willing to make those changes to achieve those goals, right? As far as bowling is concerned for Pakistan, someone like Haris Rauf not playing and Shaheen Shah Afridi having to do all the major lifting. They had that left arm
spinner. With the bat and the ball. Spinner.
Yeah, literally. They had that left arm leg spinner, right? Like, with all due respect, you know, maybe at the franchise level it works. And maybe with the quality of cricket that exists in Pakistan, it works there. But at the international level against top teams, that lad's not going to survive. He needs to improve by leaps and bounds before he gets to even being effective for a long period of time. Like, he'll probably see success in spurts, but to be consistently successful, because at the international level, you'll be posed with questions. Like, you saw Tilak Verma smashing a leg spinner from him, a left-arm leg spin delivery from him over deep mid-wicket for six. Now, what variation does he have to a left-arm, left-hander? If he's hit that, the best delivery of his that goes away from the left-hander to deep mid-wicket for six, confidence is shattered then.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of what they've done there is they've taken a flyer on the kind of bowler they want, right? Which is fine. We're not, you know, we understand that. And then they wanted to see, and you and I probably had the similar, I, I had a similar feeling. There was like, I've seen a lot of these left arm wrist spinners come through before, and the reason that Kuldeep is Kuldeep and the others aren't is because he went back after the novelty wore off. He went back and he actually upped his game, so he's now as skillful as a right arm leg spinner, but with his a left with yeah, but he's quick through the air, whereas bro, a lot of left arm wrist spinners are slow through the air, yeah, and so. If you're not beating someone with the wrong end, but this is a guy who's barely played any cricket, right? Like he's played 8 games in the PSL for 5 wickets, right?
Yeah.
And they've been using him in international cricket a lot, but he hasn't had a long-term experience of what it's like to go up against that quality of batter.
And that is the thing, right? You like they can actually have a fairly decent bowling side if they play the right bowlers and the right personnel. Now, if you have Shahin Shah Afridi and Harris Rauf in there, you have two of the best kind of T20 bowlers that Pakistan have to offer. We've seen that Saim Ayub can more than just be a new ball option. He can actually be a wicket taker for you with the way he bowls. He's got some really cool skills and that can be super useful for the Pakistan side. Then you have the likes of Abrar, who I think is a high quality bowler, very similar to Varun Chakravarti, quick through the air, on the money all times. So he can be someone who poses questions. You even saw with the way the Indian team approached him was with a lot more respect, with a lot less risks. And, just seeing off the best bowler, right? When you have, you win championships when you have good bowling sides, right? When you have gun bowling sides and you have guys who are hunting for wickets at all points and are being aggressive at all points, you will see the best bowlers in the world are never looking to defend. The best bowlers in the world are always looking to dismiss you, right? Irrespective of what the situation is, they're always willing to bet on themselves and take that risk on themselves to win matches by taking wickets. You need to have that mentality. You need to have that killer instinct. That can only come if you have prowess over your own skills and you have confidence in those skills, right? And I don't think a lot of those bowlers right now in that Pakistan team have that. For example, I even think someone like Pathirana today is struggling because of that in the Sri Lankan side. Albeit his hand's gone a little higher than where it used to be. Right now, you can look at the lad's face and I actually feel sad for him. I feel like I really hope someone's there to talk to him about how to get the best out of himself. One of the challenges with Pathi is also the fact that he speaks only in Sinhalese and is such a great kid. I really hope that he's able to communicate what he's actually going through so that he can find a solution, because he's a really high quality bowler with tremendous amount of potential. And I think people are running out of time with helping him rebound, because now the bad form could turn into conviction and something like an Ajanta Mendis could happen to him, which you don't want.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's really interesting as well. Because as you said, he's tried to fix his action, but within that, he's not any more accurate than he was before. And he doesn't seem to feel as comfortable as he did earlier. And he doesn't have quite the zip, I thought. Like, it looks as quick, but it doesn't feel as quick, if that makes sense.
I think, right? He's gone through a phase right now, and he's done this change of action for an extended period of time, over about 12 months. I think he finds himself in no man's land. I don't think he remembers what his previous action is. And I don't think this action settled in as well. So this is easily the toughest phase any athlete goes through. I remember when I was overhauling my technique, I went through a period where I was unlearning everything that came naturally to me and learning the new technique. And you hit a phase for a period of 3 or 4 or 5, like it depends on how much you're practicing. You hit a phase, a period of time where you feel absolutely lost, like completely.
Like using someone else's body.
Yeah, you feel like complete imposter syndrome inside and out about your game. And I'm telling you, there have been so many practice sessions that I've had to stop because I'm in tears because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You know, it's like just so much insecurity, so much self-doubt, so much fear. And you're trying to build from that place. And there's zero confidence in your game whatsoever. So I truly empathize with what he's going through right now. But I really hope, if he's clear about his plan, that he sees through the plan, or he's got an avenue to talk about this and figure his game out. Because what he's endeavoring to do with the change of action is dangerous and dire, and he needs to be managed really, really, really well, you know? Yeah. And
we don't have a lot of details on it either. We don't know if it's injury, if it was repetitiveness, if, you know, like, I know Estelle, who works for us, we'll get her on a podcast one time. Like, I've, she's tried to look into it. Like, there isn't that much information out there on exactly. We know he's changed, right?
Mm.
And we assume that it's a combination of trying to be a little bit more accurate and a little bit less injured going ahead. But we don't know that much.
Do you have videos of this, though? If you do,
we have. We do. We were working on a piece during the IPL, and we never quite got it out. So I think what we have is stills where we could see the difference in the heights. I'm not sure if I have a video, but I might be able. It wouldn't be that hard to find it. We can get our friends at MV Play to go back and see how far back it goes. But it's fascinating watching a player do that. Something else you said there that I thought was really interesting. You said he speaks Sinhalese, but he doesn't speak another language. There's a great movie called Sugar, which is made by the people who made Captain Marvel, but it was like this small budget film, and it's all about baseballers from Central America and what happens when they go to the major leagues. But it's not a documentary. Mm. It's such a cool story about professional athletes, because all of these kids, they're taught by the coaches how to say all the words they need to say in English before they come over. But the minute they have to have a conversation with their coaches, they can't, because all they can say is curveball, knuckleball, fly, do you know what I mean? All they could say is, but they can't have a conversation with anyone. And when they start to break down, there's no one to talk to. And do you remember there's a great moment in the Mumbai Indians documentary on Netflix when Mahela just has a go at Mustafiza Rahman and just basically says, learn English, right? Like, I can't help you because I can't talk to you at the moment. It's something that we haven't quite got to in our game, which is younger cricketers when they're coming through. I would say no matter what country you're from, you kind of have to learn Hindi, Urdu, English, right? You have to have those languages as a background, because so many coaches and people that you speak to in cricket are going to have at least be able to understand or speak that back to you. And if you can't do that, you kind of can be, you can be a franchise star and be completely left alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the effort should be more self-driven about saying, okay, you know what? I want to play this game. I want to be the best version of myself as far as this game is concerned. So I need to learn how to communicate in this language. I think one of the biggest challenges that cricketers have is the art of articulation, like to be able to communicate what they're thinking, their thought process, what's going on through their mind, coupled with the fact that, again, the dynamic of our sport, individual sport within the team sport, there's a lot of insecurity, which also stops them from talking about the things that they want to talk about, which is probably their own strategy, their method to their madness. And so then that also restricts them from sharing. Right now, you need to, like, unless a safe environment is created where they don't feel threatened about their spot and their career, then you're creating an avenue for them to open up a lot more. Again, I know it's utopic to be able to talk about something like this within our sport. It'll probably seldom will happen, but the endeavor to be able to, notwithstanding any of that, the endeavor to be able to articulate what you are thinking and what you are feeling needs to be imperative for every cricketer to have about themselves.
Yeah, no, I think it's really fascinating going ahead. I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting. What did you think about the fact that India have used Bumrah up front for 3 overs in the power play twice? I think I didn't realize you were commentating yesterday, by the way. I was messaging you, you were messaging back, and then suddenly I sent you a message and you're on air. But I think that was about the time I was sending you the message as well. It's an interesting tactic, especially being that they don't have a secondary specialist seam bowler in the team.
Yeah, and I think that's intentional based on the conditions here.
Yeah.
And I also think the grounds here in Dubai and Abu Dhabi are big grounds. And in Abu Dhabi, there's a lot of wind as well, which plays a huge factor. But in Dubai as well, when you actually toss the ball up and the batters have to put a lot more pace on the ball, the variations that these bowlers have, Varun, Akshar and Kuldeep, these guys are tigers, man, when they're bowling. They're bowling to get wickets out. They don't really care if you hit them for sixes or not. They're trying to get you out. So you need to put a lot of pace behind it. And they mix their pace really, really well. And they're much improved bowlers. They've had the rite of passage of going back, improving their game and coming back. And then continuing to understand what it takes to evolve and play at the highest level, and they're doing that consistently. So there's a lot of dependency on the quality of bowlers that they are. So it gives the captain the confidence to be able to go with one pure bowler and then have an all-rounder like Hardik bowl in the death as well. And I think when that onus is on Hardik, and we've seen in the World Cup when he bowled that last over, he has the convictions and the self-belief to deliver at any point in time. Like he's... Whether you believe it or not, Hardik Pandya is a match winner for a lot of us cricketers and for him himself, right? He perceives himself as an absolute gun of a match winner, and then he operates from that place and he delivers results. So
yeah, but there's the difference between that and being a specialist bowler at the death, isn't there?
Correct. Like I agree with you. You know, but again, so, if you're playing a match,
they're not giving themselves any insurance, is my point.
Because see, the thing is, like, you also have to look at the quality of players that you're playing against. Would they have fielded the same side against an England or an Australia or a South Africa?
Well, that's what I was interested in, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it would have been slightly different. There would have been something that would have changed quite a bit, a little bit at least. You would still have Hardik. You would still have Bumi. You probably would have brought, you would have had Arshdeep as well. And you probably played one spinner less. Akshar would have played as an all-rounder, so it would either been Kuldeep or Varun, and I think both are equally effective. But if your batting is working well and you want to depend a little bit more on Akshar and on Hardik to deliver, then you will go with one batter lesser. So you'd either go, maybe Sanju Samson will miss out, or you know, Sanju Samson will play because you're wicketkeeper. Just one of the other players will miss out. Could be Shubman Gill, could be Abhishek Sharma, one of them.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be Shubman Gill because he's vice captain. And so cannot ever be dropped again. I just thought it was interesting.
Oh, Tilak Varma. Tilak Varma. It could be Tilak. Unless Tilak learns to keep.
And everyone can keep now. It's not that hard. Robbie can do it. I mean, there isn't much to talk about, but I just think that's an interesting one as well. The other one, of course, is Sanju Samson coming down the order, which we talked about before the series, and whether they would do that, and they've gone with that. So it might be fascinating, but he would actually need to bat for us to talk about that at any stage if that comes up. I do find it fascinating, actually. It's probably not worth talking about now, maybe later in the tournament, but you've got Sanju Samson at 5, and you've got Akshar Patel at 7. Yeah, right. Listed batting order, obviously. Akshar Patel quite often, even when he was playing for India, would come in higher up in the order because he's much more useful in the middle overs when he can attack the spin than he is at the end. And Sanju is very similar to that. So you kind of have two players that do the same thing. And so one of them is going to be less used to you with the bat. So you have a longer batting order, but the batting order isn't as useful just because of the slight matchups that you have, the slight overlap that you have there. So it's an interesting one going ahead, just because I think Akshar is at his absolute best if you can use him at that number 4, number 5 position where you just say, just go and whack the spin and then we'll take care of the rest of the innings.
Yeah, the way I see it is that the whole Indian team is operating, the batting squad is operating from a place of there's no batting order for anybody. It's going to be purely left-right combination driven. And if you look at the batting order, there's left-right at the top, and then there's Tilak and Sky left-right, and then there's Sanju and Shivam left-right, and then there's Akshar and Hardik left-right, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. But even if you can take Sanju out of that and you put Shivam Dubey in, Shivam still has to go in when the spinners are on, and he's a left-hander. So Akshar still can't go into that position, right? So the only way to use Akshar's batting is him coming in late against seam bowling where he's not as effective. You're not quite maximizing his talent. I'm not saying they've picked the wrong side. It's just the way that it's kind of unfurled itself because you have Sanju in there.
Yeah, so I think Akshar's role will shift then, right? Akshar's role will become a pure finisher role along with Hardik. And I think today you'll see Shivam batting ahead of Akshar, but Akshar's role will become purely finishers. And I think Sanju, for all intents and purposes, if he wants to play for this team for a long time, then he has to switch into that role as well for the Indian team. Because right now, who's his competition in the Indian team at this point in time is Jitesh Sharma, who's also a class act with the bat when he finishes. You know, he does throw his bat around a little bit, but he is super effective. And again, conviction's incredible, and he pulls some incredible things off. So I have high regards for someone like Jitesh. So for me, like, if Sanju wants to do a favor for himself and for his career, I think would be to focus primarily on finishing innings and batting at the death, And so starting off, what we spoke about, what fucker should be doing batting at number four. Mm. Same thing. Start with spin. Think you're going to play 30 deliveries in a game. Okay, that means 30 deliveries is 5 overs. 5 overs, that means you get 10 overs to bat. That's rich, to be very honest. Think that you're going to get 6 overs to bat. And that's 36 deliveries. You're going to get 18 deliveries to bat. Out of that, 2 overs, 12 balls of spin and... eight balls of spin and the rest fast bowlers. Now, 18 balls, can you get a 45? That should be the best case scenario. 45, 50, can you get to that? That is best case scenario. Day in and day out, that's what they should be practicing. And then that kind of builds you to become that, switches you into that headspace and that frequency of operating as a finisher, practicing as a finisher, and setting high standards for yourself. But first thing is, you need to get familiar with that position. The way to get familiar with that position is to operate and practice like this. And then you refine it and iterate it as you go.
We've talked a lot about Pakistan, a little bit about India there. The other two, the other three sides, Afghanistan, we've only seen them play against Hong Kong. And they made, 188 in that game and defended it quite easily. So no issues there. Bangladesh, I was going to say, just completely bottled the start of that game against Sri Lanka. And you talked about it even briefly there, before.
Even there, Litin Das is batting at number three. Litin should be opening the batting. You need someone calm at the top who's really assured about his own game to be batting at the top. With Bangladesh, you see that with Litin Das batting at number three. With Pakistan, you see that with Fakhar Zaman batting at number four. Like, both of them should be opening the batting, holding one end up, taking that time, batting as many deliveries as possible. And because their sense of calm is going to push, is what the others will feed up out of. And if they want to give themselves the best chance to be successful, then that's what they need to do. A guy like Pathum Nisanka in Sri Lanka, right? Youngster, but calm about how he goes about his business. That Kamil Mishara, dude, that guy is talented. He's got stuff. He's really calm for a youngster, 22, 23 years old, his sixth T20i. Calm under pressure, absorb pressure. He was one of seven deliveries and got a life at one of seven deliveries. And after that, it's like he had reset and then just switched into veteran mode, you know? Very calm. Took singles, ball is in his zone, hit it, not there, tugged it around. Like, simple stuff like that. I think this generation undervalues the importance of rotation, of strike.
I think they don't understand that it's a weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So
Kamil Mishara in that game against Bangladesh in the chase, he must have ran at least 5 or 6 twos.
Mm.
And he was not trying to overhit the ball. In the gap, over the top, two. In the gap, two. In the gap, two. And that, and yet with the intent to score 10 runs and over, right? I think Virat Kohli is the biggest testimony of this. You don't need to score boundaries all the time to get. If you run well enough and if you got the ability to pierce the gaps, you can still get 10 runs every over without any risk.
And I agree. And I also think that if you are in a situation where you get stuck, I can't remember who it was. I was watching one of the games, but it was one of the players got stuck trying to hit boundaries and they couldn't get off strike. It might have been someone from Bangladesh. It wouldn't have been Jaker Ali because he's perfect and he's never made a mistake. Mm. Someone got stuck on strike and I just remember thinking, oh, you just need to get off strike. That's your weapon here, is the ability next ball to get off strike, because otherwise you're gonna churn out 3 or 4 dot balls here. And I think they did towards the end of that game, right? There's a couple of times something. When that innings, I should say.
There's a stat, I think, that every time there's both 4 dot balls bowled in a row, more often than not, I think 60 or 70% of the time, a wicket falls in the fifth delivery. And it's crazy. The minute I got to know about this stat, about 5-7 years ago, if I ever played 4 or 5 deliveries that were dots, by the time the third dot delivery happened, I'm like, dude, single, get off strike. You'll make up. You'll get the runs in the next over, but just get off strike right now. And then I would go, just break the flow a little bit, take extra time, tell my partner, take a start, let's rotate the strike.
If you look at the great West Indian side, it's something that they did really, really well. If you go back, and it sounds counterintuitive because of the way they played, but they didn't look for singles as much as other players. But when they were in a situation, they were willing to block, right? Yeah. If a good bowler's bowling to them, they will block. Chris Gayle and Karan Pollard, and I've seen Andre Russell do it before. They would just block out and over if they have to, or you'll just see them go, oh, I'm just looking for a single here and I'm turning it off. And it's a really important one. The other thing is of like, when we talk about rotating strike, also work out when you shouldn't be rotating strike. I've had conversations with players where I was like, there's no point you going to the other end at the moment, right? You average 60 against this kind of bowler with a strike rate of 180. You know the other guy at the other end. Yeah. You know the guy at the other end is going to just not be able to do that. So what is the point of taking that single? Just face it. So you have to, that's what I'm saying, weaponize strike rotation, but do it on both sides, right? Understand who should be facing each over. There's a really good chat when Aaron Finch was batting with David Warner. And they were mic'd up in a game. And Finch comes down to Warner and goes, that's my fault. I got you on strike. And that was my matchup.
Yeah.
And he was thinking, I'm not seeing the ball really well. So I'll get a single and get off strike. And then he gets him off strike. And he suddenly realizes he's now stuck at the other end and Warner can't hit this bowler, right? Because it's a bad matchup for him. So there's little things like that where, again, we talk about empathy and we talk about learning languages. This is the language of cricket. And if you're just trying to hit fours and sixes, right? Mm. You miss out on all this sort of stuff. Look at how much, you know, we've seen players like Chris Lynn and Jake Fraser-McGurk just completely disappear, right, as players, because they don't have some of the other soft skills that you need for the days when it's not working.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't have put them all right. Soft skills, very important.
By the way, Nisanka's incredible, and you called him an anchor on air, and wash your mouth out. If you call my man an anchor again, I'm coming for you. He's better than that.
Dude, they're so dependent on him. For me, I consider him, and I've told him this, I think you can be the Arvind De Silva of the modern era for Sri Lankan cricket.
But that's not an anchor. He's, so there's about...
What, you're saying Arvind De Silva wasn't a dependable batter? Like, what is an anchor? An anchor is someone who's super dependable.
Arvind
De Silva was one of the most dependable Sri Lankan batters ever to have played.
I don't know if he was dependable.
You'll take your stats out and all that. Dude, it was in the back of his performances that they won that 96 World Cup.
No. So that's different. I wouldn't say that's dependable. I think the problem with Aravinda was that he basically only got fired up for major games or against Australia because they didn't like him.
Yeah, but...
and he didn't like them. I think... He didn't have that
Rakshit,
dependability.
What are you doing, dude? He's putting up.
That was Varun.
Varun, what are you doing?
He's putting up his definition. Varun hates anchors, by the way. I'll get you around a bar one day, and Varun will just tell you all his thoughts.
What
and
an
then
ass.
You can just attack him.
Varun, you just ambushed me there.
But Aravinda is interesting. But I think Nisanka is a little bit different. I think he's probably more that sort of. He's got all the classical shots, right?
Yeah. So what's his career strike rate? He's 125, 130 under that.
It's quite low, but the last couple of years, quite high.
So that's
he was really bad, and now he's really good.
Given where he is, how do you maximize his ability? Right? He's not going to be the biggest hitter of the ball, but he's going to be he can be the best timer of the ball and maximize his game. And even if he does his best, his best would probably be at 140, right? Now, if he can, great. I'm not going to say no, he can't.
Because the last 2 years, I think he's been mid-140s, and I don't think he's the final article just yet. Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Fair enough. And that perhaps is true. I'm saying if you have a guy like him of that quality, as far as ability is concerned, and he can get from 115 to 140 with strike rate, wouldn't you want to have that quality player batting at 140 for an extended period of time as your anchor piece? Imagine the calm that it gives the rest of the side. You have to look at this as not a team that's a finished product. You're looking at a team that is a developing team that's looking to become a world contending team. You got to look at it from that perspective. So when you look at it from that perspective, you want high quality players who continue to keep evolving. And I'm speaking
from
that.
But go back to your Aravinda point. So Aravinda doesn't play like an anchor. Like if you look at that great semi-final, was it semi-final? Semi-final against India.
That is why I said, my justification of that is you can become a player like Aravinda. That is the impact. Like from a Sri Lankan perspective, that is massive.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's one of the best that's come out of there.
No doubt. I just think he's fascinating. He's also, I mean, I watched all of his cricket on NV Play, which is like 300 or 400 balls, like just going through each individual. His ability, he's got that thing that Sri Lankan players are great at, which Rishabh Pant does this as well, but it's more of a Sri Lankan thing, which is they're so quick at getting back and making themselves small that they can pull almost any delivery, right? And then the minute you pitch up, he could just slug sweep over the top. So there's no way that you, on the leg side, you can't set a field to him early on. And also, because he's so far back when he gets back and so small, he can cut balls that other people are pushing on the offside to cover. It's a
He uses his height to his advantage, right?
How tall is he? Because I've been asking around. This is
5'2", 5'3", maybe.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Because getting Sri Lankan heights of players is so hard. And he's got a little bouffant on his hair. He's got a little Ben Affleck to his hair. I think that's about an inch and a half. And me and Estelle have been arguing about this for days of like his actual height. I felt like he was a little bit taller, but I might be going on his height. But he you're right. He's the way he uses his height at the crease is great. Did you want to talk about Shamira at all? I thought he bowled. You and I talked him up before the tournament and hadn't been bowling very well. That was fantastic spell.
He bowled really, really well. And I think what he did, like his Yorkers were on point in the death. His new ball bowling was phenomenal. He bowled away from the left-handers. Didn't even try to bring the ball back in. To the right-handers also kind of get scramble seam, try to get the ball to move away. Utilized conditions very, very well on that day. So that's the thing about the Sri Lankan bowlers. They have the potential to be really, really, really good. And I just think it's about staying calm under pressure and not trying to overdo things. Just trying to play to their potential with a calm intent. I think they try too hard sometimes, you know. Yeah. But when they're calm and they go out there and execute the skills, even with Pathum Nisanka, I think when he's calm and he's watching the ball and playing to the merit, he's a player of another class altogether. But when he tries too hard, he tries to overhit balls. When he overtries, things kind of fall apart for him.
Yeah, no, very interesting. Shall we do some super chats, sir?
Quickly.
I think we've got one from Path, but Varun or Rakshit might have to bring that up for me. But this, Nahil says, are there any Asian teams that stand a chance against Senna other than India?
Nope, none.
Well, if Sri Lanka can
maybe
bat,
an odd game. Yeah, so Sri Lanka is the one I'm interested in. I think every other Asian country right now are work in progress. They're not finished products. They're not competing from a finished product point of view, state of mind, right? They need to get to that place. And I think that will take a year or two, provided they go about things the right way. The administration and the selectors are aligned with that frame of mind, with that vision, so to speak. And if they do that and if they're successful with that, then I think Sri Lanka and Afghanistan can be two teams that can be really competitive. I think the other teams are way behind that as well.
Yeah, Afghanistan could still beat some of the center teams just because their bowling attack's so good. But the batting is still an issue and it's going to be for
Since Jonathan Trott has gotten in there and he has gotten in there, I think they've switched to being more bowling.
Yeah.
Bowling-dependent side.
Yeah,
he's taken away the aggression from the batting lineup.
But he's given them something to bowl at every game, so it goes in both directions. To go back to what we're talking about with Pakistan,
it's a double-edged sword, to be honest.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because by nature, the Afghans are aggressive people, right? They like to take the attack on. They like being aggressive. They like.
They all want to be
Shahid-Afridi cricket. They don't want to be Shahid-Afridi. I can tell you that.
No. When they first came through, I talked to about 10 different players. Maybe. So for a long time, well, he's literally like he's Pashto like they are, and he was their hero. Now they're growing up and they're learning what they can be as cricketers, right? So it's a very different thing. And I think Trott coming in and being like, no, you're an anchor, you're going to play this way, has completely changed the way they think about things.
Yeah.
And Trotty's are very straight.
You can see it in the way they're back.
Yeah,
you can see it in the way they're back.
Shivanga says, an Indian journalist said yesterday, hug era is gone. Virat got to hear this after owning PCB. I can't understand some of this. Due to such people, Indian stars take everyone the wrong way. Till 2004, Gausam Gambhir and Akram were friends. Oh, okay. So this is obviously talking about the fact that there was something about handshakes and hugs and everything yesterday. The truth is, in both countries, it is very hard at the moment to show outward affection to someone from the other country, right? It could affect your income. It could affect your social media. It could affect your family and everything else. Robbie will be here to tell you that he has lots of friends from Pakistan teams over the past, but it's not the same as it used to be. And these things happen, right?
Yeah, they do. And I think I think this is a very, like, it's a very culturally political thing. And I think it brings about your patriotism like nothing does. Because when you hear the stories that you do, and obviously there are so many different narratives to this, they have their side, we have ours, and we'll stand by ours, and they will stand by theirs. And one of the things that you can bet your bottom dollar on is we've never initiated something. We've always been on the receiving end, and then we've acted.
But that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about anyway, right? Because
yeah, but again, that's the thing, right? When you ask me, then that's, you know, it's always
no. But the point being is. Even if you're right, and I'm not going to go into the entire history of the conflict,
yeah,
right?
There's no
even if you're
that.
Right, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, because throughout that entire period, the players have been friends, not always, because sometimes players just don't like each other.
Yeah.
But players have been friends, and they have shaken hands, and they have.
See, it becomes uncomfortable amongst friends, even, to be very honest.
That's what I mean. Things become
very
uncomfortable
amongst friends.
And then you've got you have to layer in on top of this, as I said, the financial earnings of sponsors, and how sponsors will feel, how IPL owners will feel, right? Yeah. And PSL owners will feel. There's so much going on now. So when people sit there and they watch the end of the game to see who's shaking hands with who and all this sort of stuff, you have to know how much more there is.
Nothing you do is the right thing to do right now.
And I think that's the perfect way of putting that. You can't win, right?
You can't win. Forget winning. There's nothing you can do right in this situation.
Yeah. Soham says, Mo Elliott and Rashid on their podcast were talking about Sky Shot, the slash over third man for six. They said no one else plays that shot. What's the secret?
Tennis ball cricket.
Yeah, it is a bit of a tennis ball shot, isn't it? It's hard. It must be hard to get power with that within tennis ball cricket as well. But there's a few shots
I would say tennis ball
now.
Cricket and knowing your game very, 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 very much in depth and knowing what. And then it's like you're training yourself to play a particular shot. Right?
Is the helicopter shot tennis ball as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's quite risky.
I think there's a few. Yeah, I think there's a few shots. If you look at it now, there's you've also got, I think tennis is more of a big impact now. So, you know, you see Steve Smith's grip and a few other players. Hockey plays a part and tennis ball cricket plays a part. So I think it's just opening up, whereas before, cricket is played with a leather ball. And then, you know, and so I just think that you're going to see more shots that come from a slightly different aspect than we used to see.
Yeah.
Nihil says, does the budgeting from ICC between teams play a role in the disparity between the Asian teams and India? That's so recent that it shouldn't play a big part in the difference at the moment. So obviously at the moment, India get a much larger fund, but that should be more seen at the grassroots level and would be something that will happen over the next 10 or 15 years.
I know from this tournament that the ACC are distributing most of the funds more towards the associate nations than the full nation playing teams.
Yeah, but I still think the ICC funds are more...
It depends on who's bringing in the revenue, right?
But it also doesn't matter anyway, because India, if you took out all the ICC funding, those other teams would still not be able to have anywhere near the amount of money. That's always been the argument of why India, Australia and England kept asking for more ICC money. And it's like, but you guys are already richer than everyone else and you're taking from the pot. That's the only way they can make money. But I don't think that's what the difference is. I think the difference is professionalism and structure at the moment, and it's really hard for the other countries to be able to match what India is doing. And then you just got pure talent as well. There's, you know, a lot of talent going on. Mm-hmm. Old iPad backup says, with two bowlers alternating every over speed up. What am I missing something there?
With two bowlers alternating every over speed up cricket.
Does he mean like what the 100 does?
With two bowlers alternating every over speed up cricket.
I've said this before. In T20 cricket, you should bowl 10 overs from one end and 10 overs from the other end. Stop making good fielders run around the boundary between overs for no reason. Abhishek says, which side actually has the new ball quality to stop Abhishek Sharma from hitting a boundary off the first ball?
None in this Asia Cup.
Who took the new ball for Sri Lanka?
Oh, maybe Nuwan Tushara. Nuwan Tushara. Nuwan Tushara. He's really good. I think he's a very underrated bowler. I think we haven't seen his full potential yet.
I suppose if you've got Naveen and Fazal Haq, so Naveen usually takes the first.
Fazal Haq, I love Fazal Haq, but I think he's just very wayward. He's just gotten his bowling right. Like every game, you'll see one crazy wide down the leg side. It's like a keeper's nightmare, bro.
Yeah, left armers. They're all wrong.
No, not all
Nishant, all left arm. Nishant says, it's not just two players, but three who are pure spin bashers. Count Dubin as well. Oh, I did do that, but thank you for the super chat. We did. I just forgot. I forgot his name because I forgot he'd been put up ahead in the order. Yeah.
Getting old.
Yeah. No, I can only read one thing at a time and barely that. Pa says, what is most true? People still can't read Kuldeep. Analysts still haven't yet understood him completely. Kuldeep is just too good. Pakistan sucks at spin.
All of the above.
So I don't even know if Robbie could answer this correctly, but I think he'll know what I mean here. Reading the cues off a right-arm wrist spinner and reading the cues off a left-arm wrist spinner are different. And the reason they're different is because it's a bit like when you're facing traditional spin compared to reverse swing. You actually need to process it mentally and back everything back. And because you don't face a lot of left-arm wrist spin,
you don't really have
the ability to actually process that. So if you look at it technically, there's no reason why a left-arm wrist spin is wrong and should be harder to play than a right-arm wrist spin is wrong. But quite often, but it ends up being harder to play because there's like a slight delay.
You think?
Yeah.
Delay. Cute.
Yeah.
That's cute.
That you have there. So that's part of the reason. But also, most left-arm wrist spinners aren't technically sound and they don't bowl very fast. So even if they can beat you with their wrong-in, so when I'm playing a left-arm wrist spinner, and Robbie will know this way more than I do, generally, I can't pick it out of the hand. I just wait for the ball that's slower. And if they bowl a wrong-in, it's usually slower. That's the only way I can pick it.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I don't agree with you at all.
About which bit?
About the fact that there's a delay, there's a lag in processing because it's a mirror image.
Oh, there's definitely a lag in processing.
No, there isn't, bro. No, maybe that lag is only for you.
No. There's a lag. So when you are facing a right arm wrist spinner and they bowl the wrong end, you instantly get it because you're looking at the position of the wrist. There is a millisecond difference when you actually have to, because you don't, how many left arm wrist spinners do you think you've faced in your life?
Not many, but
there we go. So my guess is, and I won't make Varun do this now, you have faced less than 1% of your deliveries in your life from left arm wrist spin, and you've probably faced between 10 and 15% from right arm wrist spin.
Sure.
And so it's a slightly different way of playing it. But the reason left-arm wrist spinners aren't great is because usually they aren't as technically sound because they fall over a little bit in their action compared to right-arm wrist spinners. And they don't bowl as fast as right-arm wrist spinners as well because they're not as technically sound. So he doesn't have those other things going against him. So it's a bit like Noor Ahmed. Because he bowls left-arm wrist spin at such a pace, he doesn't have to defeat you as much. Remember when no one could play Michael Bevan? And Michael Bevan was not a particularly good bowler, right? It's that most left-arm wrist spinners are slower and they aren't as technically sound. There's a delay. You're wrong. I'm going to prove this to you one day. I'm going to, in a lab. We're taking Robbie to a lab, everyone. Yash says, situations like this highlight the need to address who is a journalist. Oh, okay. I don't know about any of that. But that's something about the hugs or the handshakes or whatever they are. And Soham says, ABD says he could never read Kuldeep completely. That's because of the delay, Robbie.
No, that's because he had an eye problem and he mentioned that in his about his career, which is why he stopped playing cricket.
He seemed to be okay in the old man's league the other day.
He will be fine in the old man's league. He's AB de Villiers.
Oh, okay, yeah. We've done all the questions. Thank you very much to everyone for all these sorts of things. Me and Robbie, you never know. We might be doing a special episode next week. We don't know.
Let's not say anything. Let's just leave it.
We've already said something.
Yeah, that's okay.
And do you know what I did then? Do you know what this is?
Delay.
Delay. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.